What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with Josh Mitchum. How are you, man?
Man, if I was any better, I couldn't stand it.
Right on, dude. Nice to hear.
I got my Cherry Coke Zero.
Oh,
crushing it.
What's better than that? That's awesome, man. But so I guess really before we dive into anything, just kind of let us know what you've been up to, dude. I've been seeing your socials, and you seem like a busy guy. So just kind of let us know.
Well, I think you and I met at Bourbon and Beyond a couple years ago. And I've traditionally done mostly country-ish music. And when we met, I'd just done an album of really like kind of like the songs that I'd written that were rock songs that I never could record.
Color Shift.
Yeah. So since then, I got signed by Alabama Sound Company, based out of Montgomery, Alabama. And we just started working on new stuff. And this has been, it's been about a year process. We're getting ready to release the whole thing in September. But this was one of those where I just took down raw songs and kind of handed them over to Brett and Rich and said, they're like, we're going to do what we're going to do. I know what I want it to sound like. So it was kind of new for me. And it's real sparse and vibey, which is cool. But otherwise, man, so I run a summer camp, and we actually just wrapped like the last session of camp today. So that's why all my beard hairs are white, and I'm living in the best of times for me right now.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome to hear. And I kind of wanted to, you mentioned the Alabama Sound, and I kind of wanted to jump into that a bit. Like how'd you, this is a fairly recent thing, right? Getting involved with them. How'd that all happen?
Yes. I'd released kind of like an acoustic record last year in January, and I got a DM from Brett Robinson, who's a fantastic steel player who toured with Whitey Morgan like forever, and but decided he wanted to open a studio and just DM me and said, I'd like to do a record. And I was kind of like, I just did a record, like, you know, I just put one out like this month. And but it was like, yeah, but when you're ready to do the next thing, you know, hit me up and start sharing songs. And it ended up being a lot of songs that had kind of just been sitting there unfinished, and he was able to kind of come in and help me out with that and get that stuff. You know, just the little things, like I got stuck on a chorus or I just didn't feel it. I didn't know what it would end up sounding like. And we kind of worked through those in a couple, like 4 or 5 trips to Alabama. Mm. Like he didn't want to do it, via all the technologies that we have.
Yeah.
So I would go down and spend a few days, and we would just, you know, really just kind of go through songs and recorded them in an old, at the time he was working out of like 100-year-old elementary school. Like it had been an all black elementary school right outside Alabama.
Wow.
And it had all the ghosts, man. It was, he used analog equipment and old mics like from the 30s and a lot of reverb. And, you know, he kind of had an idea of his sound. So it was a new experience for me. And cause I'd done the Nashville, like, you know, like this, all the $1 million speakers around you and the huge console and the guys come in and knock out the drums in one take and go, how's that? And, so this was a little bit more analog and I appreciated that.
Heck yeah. And we're going to dive into that more, but before we do that, so you're based out of Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
And I'm, grew up here in Kentucky. I grew up in Northern Kentucky. People like
that's fine.
Yeah, yeah,
it's okay.
Probably I could piss out the window and hit Cincinnati, but I still claim Kentucky. So I never miss a chance to talk about the Kentucky scene and everything like that. And I personally completely biased. It's my favorite scene in music because it is so like the umbrella, the spectrum of it is so wide. And I kind of wanted to get your take on that, because when I listen to your stuff, man, any release you put out, like we were mentioning Color Shift earlier, like I love the, a big rock guy, I love the rock edge to it, just like I love your other everything. And that kind of encapsulates what Kentucky is when it comes to music. How what do you think about that?
Look, so everybody wants to just say it's like hillbilly, mountain, you know, we're all putting Mountain Dew in our baby bottles and dipping snuff or what, you know, whatever. But Kentucky is like, well, talk about my camp here. Like, I'll have kids from far eastern Kentucky and far western Kentucky that live 9 hours apart. Mm. You know, I'm kind of in central Kentucky, but I'm 45 minutes from where Bill Monroe was born. You know, you have the Everly brothers, you know, in western Kentucky, and Merle Travis. And then obviously you do have the mountain music, that is different from bluegrass, but then you got like Squirrel Bait from Louisville, and you've got, you know, all these like heavier, like, art rock type things. Like, Louisville's super weird, and I've lived 50 minutes from Louisville. So you get all of this. I don't know. It's the joke I always say is I try to write Foo Fighters songs, but I sound like John Anderson singing Tom Petty. Yeah. And like, I grew up loving Garth Brooks and Boyz II Men. So I don't know. I think the thing about the scene is that I think everybody is okay with you running your race and can and help you when they can. But also it's just like there's nothing I like better than boosting up and sharing music from people from Kentucky, because I know it's authentic, even if it's not what other people would think that it would be. And we kind of do, we're close enough to Nashville that you don't fall in love with the idea of Nashville, even though you play there and you do what you need to do. You take meetings, and if that's you know what you're trying to accomplish, but you don't get lured in as much, because you're like, I think I'll just go play Southgate House, and yes, I can plug in my my Les Paul, and or I can go play, you know, one of the many festivals that Kentucky has that are just like right on the cutting edge and are trying to find the person that is about to just absolutely explode on the indie scene and bring them all in one place, like Laurel Cove. And
yep.
I just played Master Musicians Festival, which is like one of those festivals that's small, but always has like these, like a full lineup both days of awesome acts. And I don't know, man, like, it is an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned Laurel Cove. I kind of figured that's what you were getting to there. I've heard nothing but praises sang about Laurel Cove. Like, I've had Jordan Lee King on, the Bedford Boys. They loved it. And
listen, if John doesn't let me play it next year, I'm going to be really mad.
Yeah, but what the hell?
But no, but think about it. It sells out in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
He has built some really good relationships with huge booking agencies too. Like, let me help you, bring, you know, the drop times, or, you know, a band that is right there, that's not quite mainstream, but can need that one last little push, or are almost there, you know? So he's curating something. And I think that's the key. It's not like who's the hottest right now. He's like, no, this is the style. This is the vibe we're going for. Maybe that artist doesn't fit what we're trying to do, but I like that one. And then he continues to bring in and provide spaces for Kentucky artists. And, you know, there's just so many of us, right? Like, they can't put all of us on every one of them. And that's the other thing. It's like, you also don't want to kind of overexpose yourself. But I try to follow the same thing. Like, at the barn, like, who is someone that doesn't come this way very often, who I'm a huge fan of, that the people who live around me aren't going to have access to on the local radio station? Like, how can I expose them to something fresh and new and great, but it's still one of our people?
Yeah, exactly. The culture here is like unmatched, man. It's great. And before we dive into your specific, like your last release and the record and everything, I kind of want to talk about like your songwriting itself and your creative process and stuff like that. And something I've always wondered, and I don't ask artists enough about this, is that, and maybe it's just my curiosity because I'm not a songwriter, but when you do write a song, do you typically know what it's going to be about before you start writing it? Or are there times to where you're halfway through and you don't really have a concrete idea, and then you're like, oh, okay, then it starts to take shape? Like, or does it, is it different every time? Like, how is that for you typically?
Yes and yes and yes. But, you know, sometimes it's melody, and then and you build, like, kind of build the song based on melody, and you know, like, okay, I'm going to go to this place on the next chord, and it gives you kind of like an emotional, like, it puts you in a place where, like, what makes me feel like this song is making me feel.
Yeah.
So that happens sometimes. Sometimes it is like a, like somebody talking about a relationship situation, or you hear about something. Sometimes I hear something, a line in another song that like sparks a, an idea. And then it's like, then you are, you're kind of like making a score. You're writing the score for the story. Like, like, what is it? What does, I know the story. What does it need to sound like? And then sometimes it's just like something, just, you just stumble on a thing and you're like, wow, that, that, I didn't see that coming. It, you know, but Bill Monroe, you say, well, I just reach up in the air and
grab it.
And that people joke about that. But like, I listened to Chris Robinson talking about, you know, just kind of like the muse and the thing. But I think where, what artists become really good at is kind of keeping your antenna up all the time. And I think you kind of, it is kind of like there's things out there in the cosmos that if you are paying attention, the universe will give you little pieces here and there, and like you're kind of like a conduit for those things. And if it's a, if something, well, Dylan talks about it. Obviously, we're not comparing each other to Bob Dylan, but he's like, I could never write those songs again, and I don't know how I wrote them then. And I really do think it's like putting yourself in a space to accept those ideas that are coming, and then being brave enough to go, this could sound like shit. I'm gonna let it play out and try to get to the end of this song and then see how I feel about it. I generally, like, I know like people like Bruce Springsteen will have a book of like 100 songs, and then he'll piece songs together and do things. I generally, it's like an idea for me, like a one solid idea that from start to finish. And if I can't get it to a resolution, then it doesn't, then it usually the songs are really simple and you can complicate them. If you can't get to the end of it pretty quick, then it's probably not one I'm going to finish or keep going with.
So is it, do you find it easy to like maybe overdo a song because you're thinking too much into it? And on the other end of the spectrum, like you might think you're not doing enough. Like,
look, so it, my wife used to be she's a good barometer, because she'll go, you wrote that for your musician friends.
Mm.
Like you're trying to be, you know, fancy. And at the same time, like you said, you don't want it to seem like, you know, like it's a happy birthday song or something super simple. But man, like it's like, but does it have to go through the full range of emotion, or can it just be like some, like the one song on this record that I've already released, it's coming out, it's the first song on the playlist, but it's called Something to Get Into. Mm. And it's like it couldn't be simpler. It's like, hey, do you want to go do something? And it's just a saying that we say around here all the time, like, what are you getting into tonight? I don't know. We'll find something, you know? And it's really not complicated at all. And I could have, in a matter of fact, we ended up cutting like a bridge out of it just because the bridge just kind of made it more complicated than it needed to be.
Gotcha.
But then, yeah, there's some heavier stuff. Like, you know, I've got a song about that was on my last record that was about having to kind of cut yourself off from somebody with addiction and how they can't, like, you can't help them as long as they're not wanting to help themselves, and how hard that must be to say, you know, I've got to save myself in this moment. Like that was, so that, you know, you take a little bit more time and be careful with the word choices and
more finesse kind of.
Yeah. It really just depends on where you're going. I'm trying to be more fun with songs. You know, and you tend to write and like when people journal, it's probably not when they're like super duper happy. It's usually when they got something on their mind. So I try to be more fun. Brett has done a good job of taking songs that maybe weren't so bouncy or fun, and kind of, like I said, put a little groove to them, a little bit more attitude, where sure, I probably would just cut them acoustic and they'd have been sad with like some strings or something and make you want to, you know, I don't know, jump off a bridge.
Yeah, and that's interesting, man, like the way how a song molds from the beginning to end. And like the way I listen to music, I've always been this way, and a lot of times I show my ass when I talk to like singer songwriters or a lot of country artists, is I've always been much more than a lyric guy. I've been more of like the sonic aspect of it. That's just how I've always been. Do you were you any which way on like more lyrics, more sonic, whether it's now or maybe when you first started? Did it change at all?
Man, I'm still like let's use the Beatles. Like I'm a Paul guy.
Oh, me
I like
too.
Melody. I like the music. I don't get so caught like what was it yesterday was it scrambled eggs.
Yeah,
scrambled eggs. Was the words he put in there. I do that a lot writing songs, like just gibberish stuff, like phonetic stuff that sounds good with in the flow of the song, and then find words that fit. 100%. This recording that's getting ready to come out, this record is one of those where it really challenged me, because I like to, you know, I let Brett and them do all the production. So all I gave them was vocal tracks and acoustic track, and they could add or do whatever they wanted. That was the deal, right? I would have had like six guitars and huge, cause I like to cover my voice up, and I like that. Like Foo Fighters is my favorite band. Like yeah. I sing country music and sound country most of the time on any recording I do. I call it, it's like indie art, indie like country, right? But yeah, like that's the stuff I listen to, and like Not a Surf and I don't listen to a lot of soft, easy stuff most of the time, but that's what I do. But with this one, yeah, it was kind of the words and the voice are kind of out front, and that's been uncomfortable for me.
I gotcha. Yeah, and from the past few singles that have came out, you mentioned earlier like the equipment you were working with is like the analog and I believe like the old mics. I forget how old they were, but
the 30s.
Yeah, and
like ribbon mics, like that, you know, that Frank Sinatra would have used, right?
Exactly. And like it does, the aesthetic and like the vibe, as you said, like it definitely has that, which I love. And the way I heard it, it has that like kind of vintage kind of sound, almost like I think almost like kind of like this, like even the 60s, soul,
it's
Motown-y.
Got a Motown. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
100%, which I dig. And like the drums, like they spend a lot of time, like, you know, and I'm not the only artist on this label. So like he kind of has that approach of like, this is how our drums sound and this is how our bass sounds. And I was down with that. It kind of gave me that Sun Records vibe. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to have four or five artists and we're going to record all of you. You're going to be your own personality, but the song, like the music, it's kind of like having the Swampers, you know, at Muscle Shoals who recorded, who did all the music. So that was kind of their approach, which intrigued me and was like, cause look, I've got friends that are touring with national acts and would come in and, I mean, hell, Rami Jaffe played on that record. You know, so it's like you can get all these people and that kind of, it's a flex to be able to say, oh, I got the best guitar player in the whole world. I got Bukovac playing lead on this or whatever. But it's also kind of cool to just go, we don't need, like if the song's good, you don't need all that. We're going to put just a couple things on there and let it stand on its own. And it does. It sounds like you like just had a couple people in a room and you knocked it out, which is essentially what we did.
Right. It's great. And this might sound like a question I already asked. I don't want to repeat myself too much, but like when it comes to, and I keep mentioning Color Shift because that when that came out, I played it all the time and it's, and
I still love it.
Yeah, it's great. And when you find yourself like in the studio or whatever real part along the creative ladder you're on at the time, like writing in the studio, whatever. Experimenting is like my favorite thing that artists do. And you've talked about it already, but like, do you find yourself doing that a lot? It seems like you do in any way. And has that always been that way? Does that come natural? Do you sometimes have to like force yourself? Like, how do you navigate that?
I think it's, I've done a few things. With the Color Shift, it was like, you know what? I'm going to do these are songs I knew exactly how I wanted them to sound. And I was always in a band that it wasn't going to fit into. Right. Mm. But they were all kind of in the same vein. I was like, I'm putting all these together. And I had a friend who was like super supportive of that, kind of helped with the production and getting that project off the ground. I had a producer at that time who did rock records all the time and rock drums and was like, yeah, I'm in, like, let's do this. And it was, I don't know. People quote Rick Rubin a lot, but like I wasn't thinking about like the consumer. I'm just like, I know what I if I would love for the for rock groups to record these songs, but they're not going to. So I'm going to record them how I think they would have been, they would have sounded. And then I've done a couple other records like that where it's like, you know, like this song should sound like this regardless of what genre I'm in. And then, what do I got to lose? Like, yeah. Like I don't have a 10 million fans. So my dad is always real supportive about, like, he'll tell you, like, I don't know anything about anything you're doing, but your next song might be the song that is, like, because there's times where I'm like, man, I don't even know why I put stuff out anymore. Like, what am I doing? Like I'm an old man now. Like, nobody cares. And, you know, you start feeling sorry for yourself. But he's like, man, next song might be the one. And I've just always loved all the genres. And, like, why do I have to? Again, I don't have anybody writing a big check saying it has to sound like this because your last record sounded like this. Mm-hmm. So you could, just play around. And yeah. A lot of times I'm doing it in my garage anyway. So it's for my own amusement.
Right.
Generally.
Right on. And you mentioned the consumer there. And that's another thing I always wondered about is it easy? And maybe like at this point in your career too, like, do you ever get that caught up in your head? Like, oh, this is what people might be listening to right now. I'm going to make something like that. Or this is what I need to do for this to pop. Or are you just like, like you said, I'm going to play what I want to play.
Man, I've been that guy. Like, my band Jericho Woods, we were doing pretty good in a rock and country genre thing. And we're playing kind of 90s-ish country, a little bit ahead of the curve of what ended up coming along. And I felt it at the end. Like, I didn't want it to stop. And you start getting that desperate feeling of like, okay, well, what if we put this on the song? Will that, and then when you get done, it's like I loved everything we made, but it was kind of like unrecognizable from how we started. Because I could tell we were leaning into this thing because we were in Nashville all the time, and we started having like conversations about which artists we were like and like kind of what lane we were in, and start competing with those people, and it's like the worst because it's just then it becomes formulaic and it becomes you're trying to like. It's like everybody starts wearing polos and deck shoes.
It's trendy.
So like, well, we should probably go get some polos and deck shoes so we can.
Yeah, I feel like it's easy to get caught up in that. I feel like it'd be pretty
100%.
Easy.
100%. Well, because especially if you're real close with it, and you got people who are the analogy I've used a lot is like they could have never convinced me at the very beginning to do some of the things we ended up doing, but if you get pushed, like if I just nudge you, like. 100 times, I can push you all the way across the room without you realizing it. And in some ways, that's where we landed. And you kind of look back across the room and go, "How'd I get here?" And I remember sitting in an office with the president of a label who had signed some really great people, and it was a really awesome label I'd love to have been on. And I remember even saying, "You know, we can take these songs and we can adjust them to fit whatever." And I just remember feeling kind of yucky after I left that because he was like, "You're way too polished and clean and it sounds very modern country and that's good, you know, for what you're doing. But it's a little too clean for what I do." And I'm like, "We can like turn up the grunge or the distortion." Because in my head, I'm thinking, I like that stuff too. This is just what we did on this. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And before we get into, I want to talk a bit about your most recent single. But before that, I want to ask you something. I love asking artists this. How do you know when a song is finished? Do you have an alarm that goes off in your head? Is it just like what, is there a feeling you get, anything like that?
That's a good question because I could just keep adding harmonies and I could just keep adding guitar, like layering stuff. That's where a producer is kind of important as far as like sonically, like, "Hey man, this is good." Or like with Brett, he's like, "I could take all this other stuff off and I would still like it."
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's nice to have somebody kind of in the room or somebody you trust that can listen to it and say, "Yeah, man, I think this is it." As far as the words, it's like, once you've said what you needed to say, I don't know, "Don't bore us, get to the chorus," you know, all that stuff. It's, I think, you know, if you're just kind of spinning your wheels and rambling a little bit. And some songs need to be longer. Some songs need 3 verses to tell the story. you know, maybe it's, there's three chapters to that book, but I come from a very pop place as far as presenting songs and having a chorus that's just kind of like I want the hook, man.
Yeah.
And if I can put three hooks in one song, like, that's what I'm going to try to do, because yeah. I want you to be able to sing it back.
Yeah. Right on, man. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. And
there's nothing wrong with being popular.
There's not. There's nothing wrong.
Because pop music gets a real bad rap.
It does. There's plenty of good pop music. A lot of it is good.
and it's like, it's popular for a reason.
Yeah.
Now, like you said, when people start emulating it, like when somebody else starts sounding like Zach Top, then I'm going to get tired of the whole thing.
A little oversaturated.
Right. Ella. I'm an Ella fella.
Me too.
But man, like, she's going to Hootie and Blowfish herself off the radio if she doesn't watch it. And I'm old enough to remember that. Too many good songs sometimes, like, in your career.
Yeah, yeah. It like, another slippery slope, man. But let's talk about Between Kentucky and Here came out. That wasn't too long ago. July 17th, right?
Yes, I think you're right.
I try to memorize things.
I was in the middle of FFA camp here, and it's like I have two parallel lives that are going at one time.
Yeah, I try to memorize things on this podcast. Sometimes I fall flat, sometimes I don't. But yeah, so first off, like I said earlier, like it was the sound, the aesthetic, the vibe, totally loved it. And I guess this is kind of a broad question, cliche question, but like what thematically, what's the story behind this one?
And it's this, most of the time I'll claim that songs are not autobiographical because they don't have to be, right? I can put myself into the situation and write a song about an idea. But man, like, so I quit teaching high school where I had taught for like 15 years in like 2016 and went out on the road full time for like 3 or 4 years, kind of pre-COVID. Mm. And it's like I had three kids and the farm and my wife was working, and you know, you owe it to yourself if you're going to be gone. Even if you are kind of feeling some guilt about that, like there's no sense just sitting in your hotel room and being miserable when you're out on the road. And, you know, so we would go to the local craft brewery, or we would, you know, hit a tourist attraction or whatever. And of course, you were also trying to be on social media and have this presence.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of times I love you, Stella. She won't watch this, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, it'd be like, oh, it looks like you're having fun, you know, glad you're having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm here. I had to go pick up Josie because she was sick and Will's whatever. And so there was some of that guilt of, you know, am I being selfish doing this thing? And there's an element of that. Like, it's your life and you only have one of them. And when there's opportunities, you need to say yes to some things. But it still didn't mean that there weren't consequences from me doing the thing that I wanted to do. And this song is about that. Like, you're like, you know, being out for a run of 10 days and hoping that I had smoothed things over when I did get back home so that the time we did have together when I was off the road was happy and not me, you know, in the doghouse the whole time. And I wasn't doing terrible things, but it was easy for it to look like I was just having the best time ever, because that's what social media does. And that's what, you know, Instagram does. No, we were generally driving 15 hours a day and eating crappy food and you know, washing myself off with, you know, man wipes, sleeping in the back of the van and eat, you know, but we tried to have fun. And so there were some times where she was like, well, it's not so fun here all by myself.
Well, it's certainly something that in different ways that I think a lot of people can relate to. And it's a great song, man. And before we close things out, and we've been talking about, you know, we've been hinting at the record throughout this, but I guess just kind of just in a nutshell or whatever, just kind of tell us what to expect from it. Anything about it.
Okay. So it's 10 songs. It's coming out. The full record will be available September the 19th. It's also my next Ramble at the Randall, which is my barn venue. My buddies, the Damn Shames, are headlining that. A Spooky Fox, a one man band. He comes out with a kick drum and a super distorted guitar and
love it
and squalls. But yeah, we've kind of done the waterfall release with singles. I think most artists would prefer to just release a record in its entirety, but it is what it is. And people, their attention span is so short that we thought, well, let's release three or four singles. And then, you know, it's worked. And I've gotten a lot of great support with the singles from people like Whiskey Riff and Country Central and, you know, a lot of those independent playlisting platforms that you don't have to be on a major label to get on them. Really kind of like it kind of grew, you know, and we're going to release the record and it's going to already have 100,000 streams, which is something I've never been able to say before, you know? And so, yeah, excited about the whole thing being out. Hopefully can get some more publicity and press and, you know, cause I'm touring a little bit, but man, like everybody sees like the Blue Dot Fever and all the things, touring is really, really hard. The guys that I've got booked are the guys that are playing with me in full band situations. Like I'm trying to pay them as much as possible because I want to be a priority for them. Mm-hmm. Luckily we're doing a lot of cool festival stuff and that makes it fun. And these are guys I've been playing with for a long time. So they're all friends. But as far as supporting it, I've really been leaning on social media and, you know, and like I said, it's that all the kids, that's what they're doing these days, you know.
I might as well ask you about that then. Cause like with like you throughout your career, I mean, you had to have seen the rise of streaming and CDs going out the window and like the social media, I guess.
You just age shamed me.
Hey, no, I mean, I saw it too.
Right. So I'm going to Colorado this weekend with the first band I was in. It was called Floored. And we were based out of Bowling Green. Casey Elephant opened up for us at Tin Balls in Bowling Green like 20 years ago. But I remember when we first got started, we probably would have got a record deal pretty quick, but Napster started and all of a sudden it was like music was free. You had the Metallicas that were fighting it. Record labels were slashing people and they only kept two or three different artists while they were trying to figure that whole thing out. And yes, we sold CDs forever. Like CDs were everybody had them. Streaming was just kind of like, it was a weird thing that we didn't get involved with early enough, probably. You know, in the middle, physical copies became kind of obsolete altogether. And then in the last 5 years, you know, people are tired of everything being on their phone and are really wanting physical copies of things. And so doing some vinyl, but like even CDs are coming back now, which is weird. Like, you know, I never stopped making them and always kept them available for like my grandparents' friends and my aunts and uncles, cause they still had CD players, but like even the CD sales are starting to rise. So I don't know. I may start putting everything on, just dub my own cassette tapes and write like mixtape on them.
I got cassettes here, dude. I'm either a collector or a hoarder, probably both, but I love it, man.
The cool thing is that even if it is just so they can put it on the shelf, you know, because I'm the guy who listens to the audiobook and then buy the real book, like I'm going to read it again. But I, you know, even if whatever it takes for an artist to be able to bring something to a show besides just the music and somebody take something home with them that, you know, because like I'm a t-shirt guy, I'm going to buy a t-shirt at every show I go to. And my wife hates it. And I have a whole shelf in my closet, like four shelves tall. It's all t-shirts. But I think people are starved for just like real stuff. And I think the AI thing is, you know, we don't have to get into that. But I use AI for some things, not for music. Mm-hmm. I use it for other things. If I'm trying to figure out how to fix something on my old small block Chevy 350, you know, I'm probably going to ChatGPT it.
Yeah.
But I think as our world moves further that direction, a lot of us start craving, you know, visceral, real experiences.
Physical.
That's why festivals, I mean, I know there's some that are out there canceling and failing, you know, maybe there's some that are too big. Maybe it's the Laurel Coves that's why they found that sweet spot. But I think people want an experience. And they want something they can touch and taste and feel. And I don't know. I think it is weird to have seen that whole arc. And I probably still owe Columbia House money from the 80s when we had you know, you'd order 25 LPs and for 25 cents or something. But it's a, you know, I think as long as there's, I don't know, people just want to have things, right? We're a material creature. Yeah. And I don't know, we'll keep pressing them if they'll keep buying them.
Right on. I love it, man. But Josh, thanks for hopping on. This was a great conversation. Hey, man. I'm glad. I'm kicking myself. I don't know why I haven't done this sooner. That's totally on me.
Hey, man, it's you're busy like me. It's it's like you said, Kentucky is such a special place, and it's something I didn't mention, and I need to, because they've been so good to me. I've been a ambassador for the Kentucky Music Hall of Fame this year, myself and Emily Jamerson.
Yep.
And you know, and part of my mission, you know, working with that is just to keep getting, you know, Kentucky music and Kentucky artist names out there. You know, whether it's having them come play at my barn, whether it's, you know, sharing, it's like the Creakers. Anna played fiddle with me forever and ever, and they are absolutely crushing it. You know, there's just so much good stuff happening. And if you can't root for your friends to be successful, then you can't root for anybody. So Kentucky music, the best place in the whole world.
Amen.
If you're not here, we'll still love you, but you wish you were from here. Yeah.
Yeah, right on, man. But everyone, make sure to check out Josh's record when it drops. I know I'll be clamoring for it. Can't wait. And Josh, again, thanks for hopping on. People just find you on the socials, just Josh Mitchum.
Yeah, just Josh Mitchum, joshmitchum.com, Josh Mitchum Art and Music on Facebook. On the TikTok, all the things.
Oh, yeah. You guys make sure to do that. Also, check out Raise Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. Google us, will pop up. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Josh, thank you. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, Sam. My boots would look good on your bed. And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. Gonna take you home now. Cause baby, I'm down to get dirty. With you and me and some Tennessee whiskey on us. We ain't gotta get nowhere. Take your time, make it feel just right. Make it